Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Phil Tiger. Slacker Podcast.
Hello, Slacker friends. Welcome to episode 2 of this award-winning podcast show, a panel show about music. It is a triumph of the human spirit. People said they needed more music panel shows in the world. I looked around. I couldn't find one. So we decided, you know what? We'll go and make one. If you're watching this on the YouTube channel, please drop the channel a like and subscribe. Turn on your notifications and all that jazz. And if you're listening on your podcast app, then do the same. You know, like, 5 stars, all the rest of it. And big up everybody on the Patreon as well. Everybody who's supporting all the content that we make here on Slacker at patreon.com/the Slacker Podcast for the price of, what is $3.99? What costs $3.99? For the price of one condom, you could support this podcast. So go over to the Patreon now and do as you will. Right, our Slacker friends this week are introducing first. It's a MIDI version of the Irish national anthem for Mr. Maverick Sabre.
Absolutely beautiful MIDI version. Did you put that together yourself?
I did, yeah. Are you impressed? Like, could I make some beats for you, do you reckon?
I think I might need to bring you on tour. Just give you a little at the back next
to it. This is the second time I've used this in 3 episodes because Maykay from Other Voices and the Galaxy was on. I was just like, do you know what? Maverick's on. Anybody who's Irish against the national anthem.
Keep it safe.
We have Irish superstar and all-round best singer and songwriter in the whole wide world, Maverick Sabre. Yeah. And pitting it up against Maverick Sabre, we have got, hold on, let's see if I can finish this. Hear what I say, we are the men of the day. Fuck shit is finished today. If it isn't YouTube's premier music reactor interviewer aficionado, John Denton, what's happening?
What's happening? I like the intro music.
It's good, isn't it? I was like, what?
Yeah, I feel a bit ripped off now. You just gave me some shit. You just gave me some shitty MIDI version, something that sounds like you did on your Nokia 3210.
Basically, any of the music that I play has to be like rights free and something that won't get taken down off YouTube, right? So that's why I use the MIDI, and that's why I'm using like a live cover of Run the Jewels for John. So like the moment that I can get the rights to be able to play everything, Mav, I'll fucking play Kanye West.
Fantastic! You know, exactly what I'm looking for.
I'll lay you in with some fine gigs. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Slacker friends, welcome to the podcast. How have you been? How's things been going this week?
It's been good. Yeah, it's been good. I got back to studio sessions for the first time this week. I was out in a studio in Bath called Real World, working on a project with Swindle. If you know Swindle,
I know Swindle. Yeah.
And he was out there with loads of people: Loyal Counter, Koji Radical, Joy Crooks, Ged, Sakala, we were all out there just making music for the last week. So, yeah, it's been nice. It's been a change from lockdown to not seeing fucking anyone and looking at four walls for the last 2.5 months.
What was that like when you went out there and sort of hung about with that many people at the one time? Because I walked into a pub just to get to a studio upstairs in the pub yesterday. And I even just walking through it, I was a bit like...
It was strange. I think, you know what? Everyone was in their own space. So you could feel that change that happened in people's minds. There is that level of separation still needed amongst people. And I think people feel that. So there was that. And the studio is quite a big space anyway. So there was, yeah, but you did feel it. It was strange being around a lot of people for the first day or two. It was weird.
No snogging.
No snogging. No handshakes.
It's a lot of elbows, isn't it?
A lot of elbows, yeah. A lot of elbows and distance.
See, I don't feel that bad because I was pretty big on the elbows generally anyway. Like around cold flu season at Radio 1, I'd just be like going, yeah, how's it going? Boom.
I think that's the way forward, to be honest. I think sweaty hands are a thing of the past. I don't want to touch anyone's sweaty hand anymore.
You know? Nah, nah. John, how have you been getting on this week?
Yeah, my week wasn't as exciting as Mavs, to be honest. I was in Legoland Monday and Tuesday.
That's pretty bloody exciting, mate.
It was pretty exciting because every 5 minutes you'd see someone with a giant backpack full of disinfectant going around spraying everything. It made me feel like I was in like a post-apocalyptic video game or something. It was pretty unsettling, but we made the best of it for the kids. It was all right.
If there's anywhere for you and your like two kids and wife to hunker down during an apocalypse, Legoland would be the best place, right?
There's a lot of cover if you need it, so it's fine.
Shitloads of cover, so many like unperishable snacks that'll probably last for a couple of years.
Very true.
You can change your haircut every day as well. Yeah. You can put on like the nice curtains one.
Change your profession and your haircut every moment of the day.
Right, so the aim of the game, I never really sort of set this out when I started it, whether it should be something that we sort of pit people against each other in terms of points. So I think it's more of a sort of a friendly, let's see who can get the best answer, and at the end of it, we're all winners, until I decide to change it. So our first question... Liam Gallagher drove a combine harvester to spy on the Stone Roses while they were making their second album.
Is that true?
Yeah, there was a documentary about the place in Wales that they recorded their recorded albums in, because it's up for sale at the minute. It was done on the BBC. Oasis recorded there, Stone Roses recorded there, loads of people have recorded there. And in the interview on that piece, Liam Gallagher was like, well, the Stone Roses were making their second album around about the same time they were making their first. So he got in a combine harvester with Bonehead and went across the field and tried to spy on them. And I think the Stone Roses ended up inviting him into the house, and they had a smoke of a joint and they played some of the album to him. But the question, going to you, John, first, is what is the furthest that you've gone to get someone's attention?
So, yeah, I had to have a think about this because typically I don't want to get people's attention too much anyway. I'm quite happy just sitting in the corner and being quiet.
You put videos on YouTube, like, come
I know,
on.
But yeah, that's like, it's kind of... I'm a complicated person, what can I say? But a long time ago, I used to be a big wrestling fan. I still kind of am, but especially back in the day. And I went to a show in London with my mum and my little brother when I was, I think, maybe 18, 19, something like that. And Stone Cold Steve Austin was in the main event. And yes. Being I was a young but legally able to drink, so I'd had a few beers. I was maybe not really in the best frame of mind. And as Stone Cold came out from the ring after winning his match, I decided to go right up to the barrier and douse him with beer just to see if he'd get my attention. But I'm pretty sure that he just thought that I threw piss on him because he didn't look happy about it. But some wrestling nerds shook my hand. They thought it was the best thing they'd ever seen. So I think it's got to be that.
Was the beer that you threw on Stone Cold his?
No, unfortunately not. And thinking about it, I think weirdly it was Corona, so you can't be throwing that around.
I always I never really thought about what, you know, Stone Cold would come out and he would drink all the beers and stuff, and he would drink about the mini cans. He would drink about six or seven of those mini cans.
He'd get pretty stuck into them.
But then I the older you get, when you start drinking yourself, when you're first watching it, you're about 12 or 13, so you're not. It's like Miller Lite that he's drinking, which is about 2% piss anyway, and he spills half of it down his face and his chest.
You start to look back thinking, he wasn't a hard bastard at all. Yeah. He's lying to us this whole time. What?
I could take him. I could take him easy. Bollocks, if I had a machine gun, right, and he had a couple of cans of beer, I'm pretty sure I'd win.
Cans of bloody Guinness would be grand.
Yeah. That one works. I think I went to Insurrection. And traveling over from Ireland as a pilgrimage to go and watch the wrestler. Mav, like, we're all sort of a similar vintage. Like
that's a lovely way of putting it. Yeah.
You're like, were you like a wrestling fan as well?
I was, yeah. I was the early days, though. Well, early days to myself. I'm a 90s baby, so I was like
Attitude Era.
The early Undertaker before Kane came around. Who else was in there? Probably, maybe it wasn't that early then. It was like the Hardy Boys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was that kind of era.
Same era as my own. Like, I had to go to A&E twice because I loved Jeff Hardy so much. I used to do the Swanton Bomb. Off the top of things.
Kids around the country, around the world, killing each other. You know? Yeah.
Halcyon days, salad days. Mav, what's the furthest you've ever gone to get someone's attention?
Do you know what? When you were saying that story, another thing came into my mind, but I'm going to use this one. And this was, it's not really, I've always been funny. I'm not really like a big fan of like, you know, going to meet people or trying to get other people's attention if it's not the right time. I've never really been a big fan of that. But years ago, I went to see, I'd put my first album out. So it was around 2011, 2012. So it was about like 20, 21, something like that. And I'd gone to see Damian Marley and Nas at Wembley, right? And Erykah Badu was supporting. I'm a massive Erykah Badu fan, yeah. And like a couple of weeks building up to that, I think she was signed to Motown at the time. And there was some talks with me and a couple of A&Rs at Motown, and they were kind of like gassing me up, like, look, come to the gig, you'll be able to meet Erykah at the end of it. And I was thinking, this is fucking brilliant.
Happy days, yeah.
I had all these things I was going to say to her about all these songs I was inspired by. And da-da-da. Anyway, I get there. I didn't think it was going to happen. Like John said, I ended up starting drinking. Got absolutely shit-faced. At the end of the gig, I got called in and they were like, yeah, do you want to meet Erykah? At this point now, I could barely even speak. Yeah, I was not in good shape at all. And so I was thinking, all right, they're going to pull me into a packed room. I'm going to quickly say hello. No one will notice that I'm that fucked up and I'll be able to quickly exit. Grand. So I get taken by one of our security guards down this long hallway and I get put in this room and it's just her in the room. So I'm standing in there.
Jesus.
And she turns around and she's quite intense, like in a lovely sense, but she's quite intense. And I was kind of sat at the end of the room and she started talking to me and I just went quiet. I didn't know what to say and I started fumbling my words. I wasn't speaking clear. I was drunk. I wasn't even making any sense. And the only thing I could say to her was like, she's talking to me. And I was just like, yeah, right. Yeah, trying to compose myself. And the last thing I said, I probably thought I was like being mad artistic and art, you know, I was going to leave with a good impression. It didn't fucking at all. And I like opened the door, not saying anything to her at this point. She's still a bit like, who's this fucking fella coming in here? You're not making any sense. And I was like, I love window seat. Yeah. And all the love from all the people in Ireland to you. And then closed the door and walked off. And I was walking down the hall thinking, I think I made a fairly good impression. Yeah, that's... When I sobered up, oh, mate, I've never been so embarrassed in my life. Jesus Christ. So, yeah, that was something that kind of backfired.
That again, is such an Irish thing to say when you're drunk. And all the love to the people of Ireland. You go like 100% more patriotic and you think, oh, yeah, like,
Jesus, everyone down in Wexford absolutely loves you, you know what I mean? But yeah, it was an embarrassing one. Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty decent. Right, so moving us on to question two.
I am the number one most impactful artist of our generation. I am Shakespeare in the flesh, Walt Disney, Nike, Google.
Do you know what bugs me about that quite the clip? And I've heard that a million times because I remember when that went out on Radio 1 on St. Lowe's show, I was the show that was on next. So I clipped all of the mad bits that he said on the interview and just played them the whole way through the show over all of the songs, having conversations with them. But it's just the way he just goes, Walt Disney. And you think that that's the end of a sentence. And you're like, and he just keeps going. He's kind of
a little cliff edge.
The thing with Kanye is like, I mean, and we'll get to the question in a minute, but like most people who talk like that, what you would think that are like, you know, there's something like, you know, they might need mental help and whatever, but Kanye backs it up time after time with like the numbers and the amount, like he says he's important, but he fucking is important, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of the thing, like, what's the, all right, look, I'm not the biggest fan of anyone that has to tell the world that they're greatest, but he's shown time and time again that he is as influential as he says. We go and listen to every record he drops. Every musician in the world is inspired by a certain element of what he's done. And I think he does. I think he's got a plan in place and he does put back. And I think, like, you know, he's not infallible. He's made some, you know, human mistakes. But yeah, I don't know. I'm a fan of Kanye, to be honest. And I think the people get offended when you start, what's the problem with comparing to Walt Disney? What's the problem to comparing to the influence of Nike in a fashion sense? Because I think he's got a right to say that, you know.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's hard to agree with it when he was saying it at the time initially, but when you thought about it more, you were like, okay, right, this guy's
Yeah.
It doesn't sound so crazy now, hearing it now, compared to when he said it in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, it feels like that there could be a tide switch moment with Kanye, like, because there's only so, like, because like of the last like 5 years, he's really like amped up like how manicky he is on Twitter and stuff. And I know he's had his own personal demons as well, but he does do a lot of stuff like for PR, like. And you're just wondering.
He's a PR king.
He's a PR guru. Like, I mean, like, you know, he's learned from the best, like the Kardashians, you know what I mean? But like all the anti-vax stuff and some of the stuff he's coming out with now and some of the stuff he said in the past, being a Trump supporter, there's only so far you can go with Kanye sometimes to the point where it's going to be a universal breaking point, I think.
Yeah, and you start to think, like, I suppose with someone that you admire musically, you give the chance to, oh, I hope this is some long-term plan. You know, maybe he's going to run for presidency in 2 years and he's trying to get the Trump supporters on side. I don't know what's going on in his head, but I think sadly a lot of people have maybe lost faith in him over the last couple of years, which I can understand, you know. But, yeah, I don't know if there's a longer, deeper plan in place, but
What do you think, John? Before we get to the question, do you think Kanye West for president?
I mean, it's a strange time in the world and in America at the moment. Anyway, Kanye came out with the song, was it last week, 2 weeks ago, something like that, which is excellent. The video is very powerful, and then it seemed like maybe it was this long con, like Mav was saying, that he wasn't really a Trump supporter after all, and you know, he was just doing it to get Kim into the White House to help with prison reform, all this sort of stuff. And then I read the Forbes interview yesterday.
I haven't read that yet, it's
pretty intense. Yeah, the anti-vax anti-abortion, a lot of stuff, his own views, but kind of a lot of manic stuff as well, is gonna I might be misquoting here, but he wants to turn the White House into Wakanda, something like that. And his party's called the Birthday Party. That's the party he's running with.
Oh, don't. Oh, come on. Like, it was all looking pretty good up until the Birthday Party. That's birthday right. I have read that. Yeah. And he was like going, it's called the Birthday Party because every day, if I get into office, every day is like your birthday. And I was like, oh, that's like the slogan somebody running for like head boy at a school would write.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Fuck's sake,
Kanye. In a last bit of sixth form, like, or something like that.
You're a fucking rapper, man. Like, come on. That's like the deadest slogan.
But then to say within American politics, to say you've had Donald Trump, who think years ago when he was, what was his show? Was it The Apprentice?
The Apprentice, yeah.
You think, you know, to think when he was in that show running that, you know, that fool would be in a position that he's in now, is anything can happen.
Yeah, it's so true.
It's true.
So the question around Kanye is, what musician would actually make a good prime minister or president or sort of head of statesman or woman? Who wants to go on, John?
So I went for a more serious answer on this one, and it's someone I've mentioned a minute ago, actually, Akala, for Prime Minister anyway, just because obviously such an intelligent, well-read, well-spoken guy, very thoughtful, but also always looking at like both sides of a story, always able to back up everything that he says. And I mean, I don't know if he's interested in sort of ascending to a position of more power, or if he's just happy being the kind of spokesman that he is right now. But in terms of influential people to listen to in this country, I mean, I always tend to sort of try and understand what he's saying, especially even in the last few weeks, just with, you know, something happens, flashpoints happen, and then, you know, it's very, very difficult to wrap your head around all the different media sources, all the biases and everything like that. So I just go and listen to what he has to say. And I can't remember ever hearing anything he had to say that I didn't agree with, or at least understand where he was coming from. And also, I feel like I've learned a lot just from listening to him, even about the history of our own country, which is crazy because obviously, I mean, I lived in England, well, and Guernsey in Channel Islands, but same difference, my whole life, and did history and everything like that. And so much of what I learned in history is like erased from the actual history of England that we've only learned recently. And
hey, don't get me a Mav started about English history.
So Akala, just, I feel like it's a crazy position where guys are ostensibly a rapper, although it's a bit dismissive just to call him that, can be one of the most sort of thoughtful and intelligent speakers out there. And there's other people like Loki as well, but I think Loki might be a bit too extreme in his politics to actually work as a politician. But yeah, Akala just seems that a little bit more measured, although with a similar thought process. So yeah, I was trying to come up with a stupid answer for a fun panel, but I couldn't. So I just
serious answers are welcome too. I think it deserves a round of applause for an answer as good as that. Oh, yes.
That was a royalty-free clap there, was it?
That was a royalty-free. Exactly. Nobody in that crowd who was clapping their hands is getting paid a fucking cent.
I think that frequency of clap is mine, actually. I might have to charge it back. It's on PRS going, PPL.
Well, Mav, if you're bored later on today, like you were at a writing camp, I'm sure you've still got that vibe about you. Maybe you could make me some like stings or like...
Sing a couple of skits for you.
The Slack a Friend podcast. See, this is why I don't do it. Mav, who do you think would be a good prime minister, president, head of statesman, or woman?
Well, kind of like the names John mentioned there were kind of my short list. It was Akala, Loki, and then the one I went for was George the Poet, for exact same reason. George, I think, grabs generational perspectives. He grabs young people and he grabs an older generation, from what you can see from his music to his, you know, many appearances on programs like Question Time, and how well he represents quite a balanced, understanding, educated view that I always find, like you said, with Akala and same with Loki, I always come away from, whether I agree with everything, I come away with an understanding or an agreeance, you know, a bit of information, which I think we're lacking in politicians at the moment. How many politicians do we hear speak and we come away thinking, do you know what, I don't agree, but I understand, or they've given me some new information to kind of digest. And I just think everything that George has kind of been doing, and what I know he's been doing on the ground, behind the TV screens and on a daily basis, I think is really powerful. And I think his vision is and has always been for change. And he's put that not just through his music, but, you know, through his voice and change in that way. So yeah, I would agree, but then I would pick, George.
I think like that's kind of summed it up quite well. Is like the person that like I would like to sort of follow into politics, or follow their creed or their view, is somebody who can get on with both sides, and somebody who can like not just completely and utterly entrench themselves into one side. Somebody who can just go, right, I can see the merits of this. Like let's actually look at this in a sort of fair and open and operative way.
Yeah, and then if you've got someone who represents that, as long as they're truthful within that and they can give the reason why you might tie between both sides or agree with one over one over another at a certain point or another point, it's about being truthful. And I think that's another thing which we're massively missing is, you know, you don't have to agree with everyone's point of view but or their policies, but be truthful about why you implement them. Be truthful about, you know, the decision making rather than kind of hiding the reasons behind everything.
Great answer.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And it moves us on to this.
You were in the parking lot earlier. That's how I know you.
So like I've been asking people. Oh, by the way, points if you get the clip of what it's from.
You were in the parking lot earlier. That's how I know you.
What TV show was that from?
Play again.
You were in the parking lot earlier. That's how I know you.
Curb Your Enthusiasm.
It's Creed Batten from the American Office.
Oh, no.
I should have believed in myself, Phil.
I basically should have. John, where were you? So yeah, like I always think that everybody out there has a story of bumping into whether it's a musician that they respect, an actor that they love, a Z-list celebrity that's accidentally pissed on them in the urinals. Like everybody has that story, and so far, like we've had Mike Juice last week talking about how he met Dave Grohl and held on to his arm while he was chatting to him and got called a weirdo by Dave Grohl. We had May Kay on the first podcast talking about how she met Spider from Coronation Street at 3 a.m. So there's lots of good stories in there, and I thought I'd be lost if I didn't ask you guys yours. So John, I'll start with you. You can't use Stone Cold Steve Austin, by the way.
No, that's fair. Well, I didn't meet him, so that doesn't count.
But the thing is, like, I bet when you went back to like uni or whatever it was afterwards, you were just like, yeah, me and Stone Cold, big friends.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I talked it up quite a lot, to be honest. But yeah, I've had a few brush-ins with different musicians and celebrities, but one that always stands out, I was in, my previous job was writing about video games, so sometimes we get taken on trips, and I was in New York with Rockstar. And I was staying at a hotel, way nicer hotel than I should ever be staying in generally in New York. And I got in the lift from my room. I was hungover, tired, jet lagged. And in the lift was Jack White with his, I think, wife at the time. I can't remember her name now, the really tall lady. Anyway, I was kind of completely blown away by the fact that I was a big White Stripes fan anyway. And Jack White was like literally this far away from me in front of me. And I went to go and say something and I opened my mouth and just no noises came out. So I just basically just opened my mouth like that in front of him and then realized what was going on. So I just shut my mouth again and then just bowed my head. And then he walked out the lift straight into a car and disappeared. And that was it. And I've never really forgotten about it. But, you know, I don't know if he remembers it, but yeah, it haunts me quite often.
Oh, God. Yeah, I can understand that. Was there anything that when you were standing, because when you're standing with somebody in a lift, it's obviously quite a personal thing because you're in each other's grill. Was there anything that jumped out at you about standing beside Jack White?
He was really tall, which we kind of knew anyway, but he's a lot taller than me and I'm 6 foot, and his wife was taller than me. And they just, you know, when you meet or see somebody of that level of fame, and especially this was what, probably a decade ago now. So it was still when they were massive. I think it was just before one of the albums coming out. It doesn't matter. So they just had that glow, you know, that super, real superstar glow where they don't even really look like human beings. And then, yeah, just to get whisked off into this car and disappear into Manhattan was pretty cool. But yeah, I just felt mortified at myself and I've never really forgotten about it.
You're just like there hungover, stinking of Monster energy drink. Mav, like I know for a fact that you've met so many fucking people because like a lot of people seek you out as well, in terms of musicians and the like.
I had a balance on this because there was a funny one, but it's not hilarious or anything, but then there was like a serious one. So I don't know, the funny one for me was, and it kind of like,
if you can drop both and I'll tell you which one I preferred.
All right so kind of going back to the first question a bit, have you ever been starstruck or anything like that? There was I've been friends with Sid Owen for years, who's Ricky from EastEnders. And
friends with him?
Just randomly we met. I can't remember where we met. We met in Mallorca. At Mallorca Rocks when I was supporting. Who was I supporting? Was it Tiny? This was years ago. So this was maybe 2010, something like that. And we just got on mad. And we were hanging around. We were going out a couple of nights. And when we got back, and he invited me to his birthday party. And so he came to collect me and we drove down to his birthday party. And obviously I'm an EastEnders fan and I haven't watched EastEnders properly in the last couple of years. I haven't really kind of got into it of recent, but I used to be when I was a kid, right? I was always playing in the house. Right? So I get to this party, it was in Camden, and not putting two and two together that there potentially might be other EastEnders classic there. You know? And I get there and bloody Bianca's there, Phil's there. And I was honestly taken aback. I was like, and I've met, I don't really get like starstruck. I'm not really kind of like one to get kind of overwhelmed in situations like that, but I was fucking overwhelmed. Yeah, I didn't know what to say to people. And I was just, honestly, it was the most, in my opinion, for me, it was like the most star-studded building I'd been in. I was like, oh my God, you know, there's one of the Slaters, and, you know, and there was loads of other people in the room at the same time. I remember Adele was there because he's friends with Adele, and there was loads of other people there, but it was the EastEnders actors that grabbed my attention.
See, the inner dickhead in me would not be able to sit in that room and not have the EastEnders dum, 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 right on my phone just in case somebody started fighting or somebody dropped something and you just be like...
Someone got slapped in the face. And
Oh, I can't listen to you anymore, Craig! I don't even know if there's a Craig.
It's a shit birthday party, Tony. Yeah, I was hoping someone would come up to me and go, do you know what? We're actually looking for an Irish, the distant relative, distant cousin of the Mitchell brothers. I would have been like, bloody hell, I've been looking to give up music for a long while.
I DJed at the launch, or the rap party of Killin' Eve for the first season. And I didn't know what Killin' Eve was. I didn't know who Judy Comer was. I didn't know who any of the actors were. But I was coming back from a gig in Madrid. And I got really bad food poisoning. So I turned up at the gig with incredibly bad food poisoning. I'd been puking the whole way home from Madrid. Oof. And I'd phoned my friend, Roy, to come help me DJ. And Jodie Comer, you know how absolutely drop-dead gorgeous she is? Like walk past it. And I was trying to hold it together. And they were having this big speech and I had legged it to the toilet and you could audibly hear me just retching. And,
I'm sure it was food poisoning.
Yeah, exactly. The Hall & Oates playing behind you. I can't go for that.
Anyway, that's the atmosphere. Yeah.
What was the other one?
The other one was I did Glastonbury a couple of years ago. And And I ended up staying an extra day. And on my stage the day after was Public Enemy, Bobby Womack, and Damon Albarn.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And no, it was late in the evening. So you can imagine what kind of state you potentially might be in the day after you've done a show at Glastonbury. And I stayed, it was late in the evening. Yeah. So yeah. I probably wasn't in a fit mindset to be going in and talking to people who I appreciate. You know, they have.
We understand.
So I went in and I struck up a conversation with Chuck D, and he was honestly, and this was me talk again, I was making a bit of sense, but I was probably waffling on, and he was the loveliest, kindest. We were getting into politics, we were getting into music, we were getting into, like, I don't know, political references in my music. He gave me his email address, and it was beautiful. It was beautiful for the state that I potentially could have looked like I was in. He handled it tremendously. I mean,
we both have Chuck D's email address, and I've never used it. I met him in Belfast once.
Yeah,
it's a similar.
I'm thinking all these Irish lads are always fucked every time they come.
Yeah. Very friendly.
And maybe it's not his email address at all. Maybe that's just the one he gives out to, like, oh, this is another
drunkirishman@gmail.com. Right, let's move on to our next one. How relaxed do you feel right now? You're in a crisp garden with lovely plants. It is the Dalai Lama releasing an album on his 85th birthday.
Wow.
Fair play, Mr. Lama. Do you think he gets his post as Mr. Lama?
I would hope so.
I would hope so. But, like, yeah, releasing his first album at 85. Apparently the woman who brought it to...
Was that a bit of the album
there? This is a bit of it, yeah.
Okay.
Imagine I got this whole thing tore down because of ripping off the Dalai Lama. I'd be like, it's not really in the Dalai Lama's spirit to, like, you know.
You haven't cleared PRS, we're going to strip the whole show here.
So Dalai Lama is releasing an album on his 85th birthday, which begs the question, what is the oddest album you've ever owned or have ever listened to? John, I'll let you tear away at this one.
So I was thinking about this one for a bit, and I was like, in terms of, I'm not much for, like, collecting weird odds and ends anyway. So I was thinking I'll probably have to go back to the first singles and first albums I ever had. So the first albums I ever had, I think I was about 6 years old, and for Christmas I got Jason Donovan's album and Kylie Minogue's album, both on separate cassettes. And
did you make them kiss?
I probably did. So yeah, they had the lyrics in the sleeves in the cassette and everything like that. So I knew all the lyrics to both of their albums. So I mean, yeah, that set me on my path. And then in terms of singles, it was a few years later, Shaggy O' Carolina and Informer by Snow, which is legendary record. So yeah, I think considering that those were the first sort of influences in music that I've had, it's kind of amazing that I'm here right now.
Yeah,
but that's just how it worked out.
I think like your brain is such a sponge, and you're still trying to, like, figure out what it is you like, that your music.
I'm still trying to figure out what Snow Informer is all about, to be honest.
I just know it goes off wherever it is you play it. But, like, I think it is very much like learning to walk, trying to find your own taste in music. Like, you're gonna fall, you're gonna fall down a couple of times. I was into, like, Ministry of Sound compilations and Venga Boys,
wow. Yeah,
Blur, and lots of, like, dance songs, whatever, like, they were playing at the teenage disco and stuff, was kind of like it. Do you know what I mean?
The Irish, everyone's got a bit of a techno fan in them, you know?
Give me up and away.
All you have to do is pitch up the vocals and you'll get an Irish crowd going. Put a bit of a forte. <there.
laughs> Yeah. Teenage discos back in Ireland, I'm not sure, John, if they're the same with you, you can tell me. They would play just banging dance records like Toka's Miracle and Better Off Alone and ATV Till I Come and stuff like that. So, like, effectively when you were 11, you were raving like you probably would be at, like, 19. Like, big shout out to DJ Gary, who had, like, really inappropriate porn cards that he was, like, would have when we were playing, and like all the boys would go and steal the cards while he was DJing. It was really fucking off color. Like. So that definitely is a strange mix of tracks there. Mav, what about you?
I don't know. Yeah, I had like a kind of serious, not a serious one, but one that I bought recently and one that I remember getting when I was a kid. And I remember getting bloody, which is hilarious for a young kid growing up in bloody Wexford. I got Ant and Dec, We're on the Ball on single, not an album. But I remember being like, this is a bang, we're on the ball. Yeah, which is mad. Yeah, which I probably won't admit back home, but we'll admit here. Yeah?
This is the second time in three episodes that Ant and Dec has come up and it's not been Let's Get It Ready to Rumble, which blows my mind.
What, is that song come up before?
Not that song, but like something else off the album. It's clear that Ant and Dec have left an indelible impact on the culture of music in the UK. And
the original influencers, yeah?
Yeah. That's true.
And another one was this, and it's just a mad, bloody, like, kind of punk record, but it was the only thing, until recently, funny enough, actually, Lowkey had him featured on a record. And then I found out Manic Street Preachers actually used a quote of his at the start of a record as well. But it's a band called Bad Religion, and it features Noam Chomsky.
That's great.
It's a mad record, but it's the only thing in my collection that I'd had no clue who the band were, and it was just a kind of the most random thing I had in my collection.
I've heard of Bad Religion and I've heard of Noam Chomsky, but I've never heard of them together.
Please.
It's very much like that fast show sketch, is it? You like peas? You like cheese? Cheesy peas. that's some seriously good albums. I think like the Dalai Lama's still playing in the background. No, it's not. Can I get away with playing the Dalai Lama on Radio 1 if I do the Chillest Show?
Well, if it's the Chillest Show, it's a bloody Dalai Lama, so I hope you would.
See, wouldn't it be great to get him on for an interview? I don't know what
you'd ask. Yeah, on this podcast.
Get him on the podcast, yeah, exactly. Anyway, I'll think about that another day. We're in the middle of the Slacker Fest. Yeah, screw you guys. I'm talking about the Dalai Lama.
Hold on, Dalai.
Any chance you could jump on here and save this? We've got got our unpopular opinion, which I actually just have added this week and realized I don't have a musical sting for. So maybe I'll just play the Oasis.
You're a piece of garbage. A real shitty piece of garbage.
All right, well, I don't know what that was, but like that'll do. The unpopular opinion. What is your musical unpopular opinion that maybe grates against the grain?
I don't know. For me, it kind of went through a couple of things. Like, I don't know. The one I stood on was, I wasn't really a big fan of Kent. I wasn't not a fan of him, but I never clicked with him. I never like understood him.
With who?
Kendrick Lamar until to Pimp a Butterfly. And people were telling me for years, oh, why are you not listening to him? It was Section 80 and then Good Kid, Bad City, right?
Yeah.
Good Kid, Mad City. Mm-hmm. And I just never clicked with them two records for ages. And the fact that everyone was like, you've got to listen to him, that turned me off even more.
That does happen.
But when I heard To Pimp a Butterfly, I went back on my words and I was like, yeah, I get it. I understand it now. You know, but for years I would argue with people and I would stand my ground based on nothing other than my own ego. No, pretending I'd even listen to the record. No, I've listened to all of them now and I haven't clicked.
You're one of those people that like, will argue till you're blue in the face that like the Beatles are a crap band, like, do you know what I mean? just for the sake of it.
I
think mine would be like, I just don't get the National and it's not that I dislike them at all. It's just like, I have a lot of friends who seem to really, really love them and they keep telling me how much I would love them if I got into it, and I've listened to it, I've tried it and I just can't. I can't.
That's definitely a band where a lot of people will tell you or go at you for not liking them or trying to enforce their love for them on you. And like you say, that can really put you off, can't it? I like the National, but I get that.
There's a strange purity with some people, like with the music that they love, and that you have to like it. If you don't like it, you don't like music or you don't understand music. It's strange.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, people's tastes are black and white, but when you sort of mix them with other people's subjectivity, it can brew up a nice wee fight, I reckon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. John, what's your unpopular opinion?
I had to think about this for a minute because, I mean, like Mav, I've had, even Kendrick Lamar himself, in fact, when I first heard To Pimp a Butterfly, I just didn't understand it. And it's only going and listening to Damn and then going back and doing all his records, fortunately, on video. So I'm lucky that they're out there on YouTube and really reappreciating what I was listening to and also getting a better understanding of hip-hop in general. I just think I was coming to it with uneducated ears at the time. But what I wrote down for this one is actually is something I've been thinking about for the last year or so, is that Oasis would actually be nothing without Liam Gallagher. Obviously, Noel wrote all the songs and, you know, they obviously wouldn't be anything without Noel. But I think if it had just been Noel on his own writing that music, they would have never have got anywhere. And as much as I don't mind Noel's music since, I don't really think it's on any sort of level. And the second Liam has a moment with his new bands, which even sort of glimpses of old school first two albums Oasis, it still charges those memories of me being a teenager and this kind of like era life defining music. So I know he's a nightmare from what I can understand and was probably extremely difficult to work with and whatever, but yeah, he doesn't get the credit he deserves, I think.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that, because like if you look at it now, Noel's singing style is more Pipe and Slippers, whereas Liam's is punk rock. Like, it's proper punk rock. Noel couldn't sing Cigarettes and Alcohol or anything off that first album the way that Liam does.
Nah, and that was what brought the message in the music and the feeling of it to the forefront, because he is the ultimate front man in that sense, out of that, you know what I mean, out of the two of them. Obviously, the combination is the balance, because the songs, and Noel's great songwriter. But I went to see Liam at Ali Pali about 2 years ago, and I remember seeing Oasis' last gig in Ireland. I think it was in Marley Park or in it was the last one in Dublin anyway. I was about maybe 18, 19. And seeing Liam at Ali Pali, to me, felt like an Oasis gig. Mm. That was the power in it, you know what I mean? Which I've seen Noel, and it doesn't translate in the same way, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I went to see Liam Gallagher at Finsbury Park, and there was a fella standing watching it who was probably about 6'6", about 25 stone. He was completely and utterly buck naked with a bottle of wine and a cigarette. And he wasn't even buck naked, like going, look at me, I'm naked. He was sitting watching the band, just like that, like a baby. And my missus went up to get a photo taken with it's fucking one of the best photos I've ever seen in my life.
As a man who sounds like he's enjoying
himself. He is. He's just like,
he knows full well what he's doing.
But I was wondering where did he get the cigarette from and how he lit it, because he didn't have any pockets. Right. Final question. Little MIDI from Drake. Whereas the Dalai Lama, I would assume, wouldn't sue us for reusing his music. Drake probably would.
Drake probably will, yeah.
Yeah. And the question is Drake actually any good? It's a deep, deep question. And he's popular and he's mainstream. And of course, he's one of the biggest artists to have emerged in the last like 10 years. Mm. But is he actually any good? Good is the question. John, do you want to start with this one?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite an easy answer for me, to be honest, and it's definitely a yes, with a caveat which I'll go into in a minute. But I mean, going back and listening to Take Care or Nothing Was the Same, I don't think there's any questioning his pen. I think he's capable of creating little couplets and bars that managed to stand the test of time for years, and people, you know, I call it Instagram caption rap on my videos, because people will just use, and he definitely writes for this reason. He definitely writes, you know, he'll shoot his shot on funny little lines or clever little lines that will have people writing them on social media, and he misses some of the time. But when he hits, he manages to make you feel like you're part of his entourage, which is a really amazing thing, because you're quite clearly not, nor would ever be. Well, I certainly wouldn't ever be part of his entourage, but he manages to make you feel like you're along for the ride with him. But also in the way that he's not the first rapper, but he's probably, you know, post Kanye, certainly the biggest rapper to be a bit more open about his feelings and a bit more vulnerable. And you can question whether or not there's some, you know, like, disingenuity in that, but at the same time, like, he certainly with a Marvin's Room or something like that, has opened himself up to be not necessarily just your typical braggadocious hip-hop star MC. And with that, with some of the lines, they do speak to people. And like even in some of his newer music, like Chicago Freestyle and When to Say When recently, there'll be bars in there and you're like, there's not many people out there that can put that together, especially operating at the level he's operating at, constantly the pressure of having to be number one guy. Now, on the flip side of that, he's a bit weird when he talks about women. He seems obsessed with like girls that he saw once and they can't ever have boyfriends or get married. So that's a little bit troubling. He got absolutely bodied by Pusha T and it doesn't seem to have really recovered from that and still tries to take subliminals at him. And you don't want any part of that. I don't think, Drake, just walk away. Nobody's beaten Pusha T.
Yeah.
And as much as I like the guy, he will, and a lot of his music, he'll go and do something cynical like a Toosie slide, which was designed for TikTok. And yes, some people might say, okay, but if you listen to the lyrics, it's actually a street song.
The song is about, fucking shit. I'm sorry.
It's about, you know, what a piece of crap. And I'm like, mate, you weren't spinning around blocks going and like shooting ops. Like you just weren't.
No, there's nothing redeemable about that track. It is the hokey cokey. Or it is like put your left foot in, left foot out.
I could not believe it when I first heard it. I heard it was a TikTok track, but yeah, when I first saw that, I was like, smart. Oh my God.
Like, yeah, I'll give him that. He's definitely smart. Like, he's made a lot of money from it. But yeah. Okay, very, very good answer. Maverick, what about you?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. You know, I think you can't knock Drake's legacy from the first time I ever heard him up to very recently. You know, he's kept himself relevant. He has... Yeah, I feel like subject matter has been quite balanced, especially emotionally as time's gone on. And he's, you know, whether you like him or not, he's created hits that have lasted from every moment you can imagine for the last, you know, 10 or however long years he's been out. I'm not sure if he's created a classic album. He doesn't hit me in the way a Nas or a Tupac would, but I don't think that's his role. You know what I mean? I think, you know, I wouldn't say I'm the biggest Drake fan, but he's someone that always grabs me back in at some point. And just speaking solely on what he's done for the UK music scene, I massively commend that. You know, there's been artists from outside the UK coming over and maybe using certain UK artists for years and not giving them a proper leg in. And I think even though it was probably hand in hand a bit to his own benefit, because I feel like he's influenced by loads of different styles and he's Drake, so he's got the influence and power to be able to go take a bit of the style and benefit himself as well as other people. But he actually did, you know, there's a lot of people that have made a brand new career for themselves off the support and kind of alliance with him, so I've got to commend him on that.
Yeah, he did big things for Bryson Tiller, did big things for Dave, like he did big things for gigs like in the US.
Definitely.
He is the equivalent of your friend, like, you know, your cliquey group that you had when you were a kid, and one of your friends whose American cousin would come over and stay every other summer for about like 2 weeks, and they'd have really nice clothes on, and like, you know, and they'd smell different, and they'd be a little bit taller and stuff. That's true.
And then you're slowly in awe, like, oh,
yeah. Then you wouldn't see him for ages. Yeah. That story,
like,
about
I think the thing with him on the kind of gang stuff, I think he's way beyond that, and he uses that element to, like, I don't know, keep himself and his name in the streets, which, you know, I don't believe what comes out of his mouth when he talks about stuff like that, because I don't know if he was ever that. But
I just remember,
so there's that level of truth that I is a bit of a gray area with me for him. But I don't know. I think he's undoubtedly done great work.
I just remember that story of him being spotted in a co-op in Ipswich with Georgia.
Yeah, it was in Walsall. Ipswich. I was thinking he was in Ipswich as well, was he? Bloody hell, he's been getting around the country. Next minute, he'd be in Hull and Bradford.
Right, time for our... There goes my hero. Every time I hit that, I think it's going to say Hero of the Week. right, who's the Hero of the Week? John.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not necessarily this week, but over the last few weeks, I'm going to give it to The Weeknd, who's been donating vast amounts of money to some very important causes without really making too much of a fuss about it. You sort of see it on his Instagram story, and obviously the media picks it up, but there's no big grand gestures. It doesn't feel like PR stunts. $500,000 to Black Lives Matter causes a couple of weeks ago, pretty much straight away after everything happened. And then just recently, $1 million to COVID-19 relief. Obviously, he's a very well-off guy, massive, massive superstar. But I mean, that's still vast amounts of money to just give away like that without, like I say, it doesn't feel like PR moves. They're not, you know, they're public and he tells people about them. But yeah, there's no big video behind it or documentary or anything like that. So I think, you know, in a time where a lot of people are doing a lot of good things at the moment for one of the biggest artists, if not the biggest artist in sort of the Western world at the moment, arguably, to really put, you know, his hand in his pocket and put his mouth where his money is or money where his mouth is or whatever. I think it's pretty commendable. Yeah, and like I say, it wasn't this week necessarily, but yeah, just over the last few weeks. And he didn't have to do that. So yeah, respect to him for that.
Big respect to the weekend. Maverick, who's your hero of the week?
A bit of a different one, but it's Mike Skinner. And I picked Mike Skinner, one, because I'm so happy that he's back releasing anything. I just like to hear his voice on stuff again. And I heard this tune recently he put out, I think maybe about a week ago, called Difficult Times. And I quite liked it, you know. But also mainly because he's been doing work with loads of like new acts. I saw him put Green Tea Peng on. He's been working with a lot of young MCs from the Midlands and up north. And I see he's been, like, you know, hosting some documentaries, interviewing a lot of the young drill artists. And he just feels like he's doing a lot of work with young artists, which I think is a beautiful thing, which is normally you don't really see. Artists make their money, they continue touring. He doesn't need to do that, you know. So, yeah, and I heard the new Green Tea and Danao tune. And I don't know, I just felt like he feels like he's still connecting hubs together. And I've always been a Mike Skinner fan. So just to even see him do that still is a hero.
These are two very, very, very solid answers. And I agree with both. Do you know, for this week, I'm going to take the villain, because there's such a good positivity floating around the show this week. I'm not going to bother with the villains of the week. The villains of the week can get in the fucking bin for all I care. Let's move on to music suggestions.
I fucking love this band. They are the best band ever, period.
So last week I said that everybody should go listen to a new act called Park Hai Jin. And I was like all excited about it. I was going to play it on the radio for the first time on Sunday. I've been kind of shielding it away from people. And then I turned the radio on literally half an hour before this, and Lauren Laverne was playing it at Six Music. And I was like, fuck, I've missed my exclusive. Shit. Who's mine? I haven't actually prepared one this week. I'm going to go for an artist called Kieran Lavery, who's got an album out called Please Stay Baby. And it's all like, there's no vowels in it, so you know it's cool. But it's a really raw, very meta album. It kind of breaks down the fourth wall of what it's like to be a songwriter. And it's just fucking great. And yeah, Kieran Lavery and Please Stay Baby. John, what about you? Who are you recommending?
So there's a few, but I'll just go for a guy called Kemba from the Bronx. He's obviously a New York rapper. And he's just put out an EP, four-track EP called The World Is Watching, which is, he's kind of an understated lyrical rapper. And it's like a really powerful sort of protest record EP, just about everything that's going on at the moment. A lot more understated than some of the music that's been put out there recently. But he's a guy that is a little shy. I've spoken to him a bit, and he's actually quite shy for a rapper, unusually so. But he has a great pen, a lot of influences. There's times where he sounds like Kendrick Lamar, but he's also jumping onto different styles. He's done some stuff on trap beats. He even tried his hand at a drill track not long ago. And he put out an album last year, which went under the radar, called Gilda, which is all about his, it's basically a love letter to his mother. It just passed away. And it's really heartfelt and beautiful. But at the same time, yeah, he can just switch lanes and just put out a banger. And seems to be able to jump effortlessly on different styles of beats, which there are in hip hop at the moment. And he's one of those guys you hear and you go, oh, this guy should be, he's never going to be like super mainstream because he just doesn't have that personality, but he should be at a level that's more similar to like a Griselda type level, where a lot of people are really, really fucking with his stuff. And I don't think he's quite got himself to that level yet. I don't know if his his label's not pushing him in the right way. But I'd highly recommend The World Is Watching, just 4-track EP from him, and then maybe go and discover his other stuff. It's very good.
Spell that out for me.
Oh, Kemba, K-E-M-B-A.
So just as it sounds.
Yeah. You know what that happens. Number one.
That sounds great. I'm checking that out. Maverick, what do you say?
This is a guy who I've properly connected with over the last week, out with Swindle, and is a singer. You might have heard of him before. Definitely, you know, has got much more and even more of a beautiful career to offer. Is Joel Culpepper.
Oh yeah, I've been playing one of his tracks on the radio. Like, he's really good, yeah.
And Joel, he's a lovely guy. His voice is fantastic, and I got a sneak preview of his new album, which is coming out soon, and it feels like new Curtis Mayfield. It's just, yeah, I was blown away by it. Wow. So yeah, definitely check him out if you're into powerful, strong voices with character and message and soul and feeling in it. Yeah, he's one of the kind of more exciting voices that I've heard in the last little while. Yeah, Joel Culpepper.
Wow, guys, I love those tips. I'm going to go listen to more Joel Culpepper now. I'm going to check out Kemba. Guys, thank you so much for coming on and giving me an hour of your time, and for being this week's Slacker Friends.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.